And welcome, 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 welcome. How the bloody hell are ya? Welcome to episode number 183 of the Average Man Podcast, way down south. Look, we are down south, which is obviously the reason why I chose that song to bring us in. And I'm currently at the Pemberton Caravan Park, which is been pretty nice. You may have caught my Instagram post this morning, like with the backdrop just behind where we are. So doing the workout out the front there of the caravan, and just there's I had a chat with my son about it today, whether it was a small mountain or a large hill. I tend to think it's a large hill, but he wanted to call it a small mountain. Either way, there's an undulating section of land covered in carry trees and just beautiful forested area right behind us. And in the mornings, it's kind of misty and it was raining this morning. It was like really nice, really specky, good spot to be doing a workout. So that's been nice. And we just spent the afternoon, my son and I, traipsing around Big Brook Dam, trying to find a spot to fish for some trout. Complete fail. We had no luck. We got up to our ankles deep in mud. The dog was up to its belly deep in mud. We had snags on the bottom constantly. We changed that three different types of setups to try and, you know, avoid skull dragging our hooks and sinkers over the weed at the bottom. We didn't get even an inkling that we were in the right spot doing the right thing to catch any trout. So I'm going to need to speak to some local people tomorrow and get a bit of local knowledge, what they're fishing with, whereabouts on the dam they're fishing, and see if we can get out there and catch some while we're here. Because there used to be a trout farm down here. And just our luck, it's closed as of December last year for maintenance and repairs, and they haven't done those maintenance and repairs yet, so it's not open, man. I fished there years ago. Quick little story about Pemberton. The last time we were down here was in probably 2009, my wife and I. She was my girlfriend at the time. I actually proposed to her down here. And she said yes, obviously, because we got married. So, yeah, that was the last time we were down here. So we've got fond memories of Pemberton. We stayed in little cottages, Treenbrook cottages, I believe, from memory. Climbed the bicentennial tree, which is a tree with it's a huge carry tree with just rheobars stuck out of it in like a spiral going up the tree to the top where there's a cage there. It looks like they've done a bit of work, as in putting like a sort of outer cage thing around the rheobar when you climb up, but essentially you fall, you die, and it's currently not open for climbing. I'm not sure why, if there's some sort of safety concerns there or if it's a rehabilitation thing, I'm not sure. But really all you need to do is get people in a harness with the double hook set up like scaffolders use. You have two hooks coming off the pin, the connection point on your chest. And you just hook one onto the rheobar, climb as far as you can, hook the second one, unhook the lower one, climb as far as you can, hook the second one, unhook the lower one, and so on and so forth all the way up. So you're always hooked on. So if you ever fall, you only fall like a meter and it catches you. And they're not sure what the deal is there, but I remember climbing that back in the 2009. So I was, what's it now, 2023, so I was 15 years ago, man. So yeah, I was 25, far out. I was a spring chicken, and we climbed that, and I was terrified, man. There's another tree here called Gloucester Tree or Gloucester Park Tree. No, Gloucester Tree, I think it is. And it's the same sort of deal. You climb up, but they've got a halfway platform there, and then you climb up further from there. And I think I climbed to the halfway platform on that one, and it's a bit more of a actual ladder, and then I couldn't go any further. Like, my knees were all shaky, my hands were like sweaty. Like, you probably getting the picture now that I have some heights, you know, like some fear of heights. So, you know, which is great when you're a chippy. I was a roof chippy back then as well, but it's a different thing when you're on a small height. When you're at a small height, especially if you're working and you know how things are built, and I don't know, there's this different scenarios where heights become an issue, and climbing a tree was certainly one of those, because they're massive trees. I think it's like 84 meters or something like that. It's huge. And so I chickened out essentially to climbing that Gloucester tree, and like for days it was kind of stewing in the back of my mind. I felt like a pussy. I was like, oh, I didn't climb that tree. That's going to piss me off for ages. And then a couple of days later, we went to the bicentennial tree, and I thought, fuck it, I'm going to do it. I'm going to climb the tree all the way to the top. So I started climbing it. I got like a quarter of the way up, and my knees were weak. My hands were sweaty. It's literally like when you get, I don't know about other people, but when I'm at heights like that, I feel like I can't feel my hands holding on. So as if I could, like I could just fall off whatever I'm holding to without my brain giving the signal to my hands. It's like the connection's not working properly. It's really weird. It's like they're numb. And I was feeling like that. I was like, holy shit, man. Like, I'm sure I was white knuckling, so I was squeezing the Rio bars, but I just felt like I could just fall off at any minute. And I was like, oh man, I need to go down. I can't do this. I looked down behind me to climb backwards to get out of it, and there's like a 13-year-old girl just motoring up. And I'm just like, I guess we're going up then. So, you know, my pride drove me up to the top. And then when I was at the top, you know, I felt a lot better. Looked around, the view's amazing. You're breathing the fresh air. You're at the top of the canopy of the Karri Forest, man. Like, it's amazing. It's really good experience. And, you know, I overcame the fear and did it and all that. So it was super rewarding. And then coming back down was even worse, man. You just feel, I feel like I'm going to fall the whole time. But came down, lived to tell another, you know, lived to tell the story and to climb another day. But as I said, that tree is now not open for climbing anymore. Gloucester's not open for climbing anymore. How I started this little meandering train of thought was the trout farm's currently not open. What else is it? The strawberry farm's only open on, it's not open until Thursday. It's Monday afternoon at the moment. The wineries don't open until Wednesday. It's like, holy fuck, this town just goes to sleep this time of year and this time of the week. It's like, there's no wonder that there's a mass exodus out of the caravan park this morning. It's like nothing happens for the next 3 days. So, you know, we declined going on the ropes course thing that's over at the national park in the Karri trees. It's like a bunch of, you know, rope bridges and zip lines and stuff like that going from tree to tree. Just because, like, it didn't look that impressive for the price, man. They wanted $47 per kid for the medium course and $65 a head for the good course. You know, both kids wanted to do it. At least my daughter wanted to do the easier one, then my son, then me. It's like an hour and a half or hour to hour and a half cruising around doing it. I'm just like, you know, I think you guys are charging too much for what it is. And I said, is there like a family discount or you can do a better price or anything? He's just like, nah, well, you pay for the setup and the ropes and this and that. And I'm just like, well, there's fucking no one doing it, man. There's two people here working and there's no one doing your course, probably because you charge too much money, especially this time of year when it's a bit quiet. So we opted out of that one. It just, you know, I'm all up for an adventure and I don't mind spending the money if I think it's worth it. But it just didn't tickle the gonads enough for the money they were asking, man. So someone was a little bit disappointed about that, but I think he caught onto my reasoning there. So we skipped that activity and then went, yeah, like I said, searching the dam for a spot to fish for some trout this afternoon to no avail. Tomorrow we're going to go on the tram out into the Cascades in the National Park as well. There's a little tram that takes you out there for a few hours. Dog's allowed to come on that one. That'll be a nice little journey. And I will be chatting to some people, hopefully maybe even the tram driver, and trying to get some inside info on what to fish with and where to fish on that dam to have a half a go at getting some trout. We just came from before here. We just came from Warner Glen Bridge, which is a nice little spot on the Karri Forest on the Blackwood. Well, it's actually on the Brockman. It's about 100 meters away from where the Brockman meets the Blackwood, which was nice because camping on the Blackwood has been a bucket list item of mine for several years now. You know, so it was good to tick that one off. You know, and there's a little tiny little boat ramp there that we launched the supboard and you paddle around the corner to the Brockman and paddle up and down the Brockman a little bit. There's like blue swimmers in there, or blue manners, I think you guys call them down here. In there swimming around, you can see them pretty clearly, and there's some black brim around. We had a bit of a fish there as well, also to no avail. And if you're wondering what the you know, the trend is here. It's me. I'm not a good fisherman. I'm a terrible fisherman. I'm not a keen fisherman. You know, I don't really enjoy it. I have had some really good times fishing when I've been out on boats or with other people who know what they're doing, or you're just in a good spot catching salmon off the beach or something like that. I've had fun fishing. But it's not something that really gets me up in the morning. It's not something I like to dedicate hours of my time to, which is sort of what you need to do to have success. But the boys been really interested in it lately. So, you know, we're going on a bit of – doing a bit of fishing on the way around, which is good because it motivates me to have a crack on the way around again. But I'm super rusty and I was never good to start with. So, you know, we're fumbling our way through it, and I feel like it's going to take a while till we – hit a groove and actually start catching some fish. But we're putting the time in. It's good father-son bonding time. My wife enjoys fishing. My daughter's been getting involved. So, you know, we're out there in nature having a chat, doing the damn thing, and it's all pretty positive. But certainly no fish for us yet, eh? That Warner Bridge spot, really nice. We tried to go to Alexandra Bridge actually first, which is just a spot I'd been told about. My dad told me about it and a few other people said, yeah, really nice. Pulled in there, it was busy. It was fully booked up and you know, quite busy and kind of quite jammed in together. And then someone said, go check out Warner Glen back down the road. Or Glen Warner, yeah, Warner Glen Bridge, yeah, back down the road. And we cruised back down and I mean, it's just as nice as Alexandra Bridge. You know, a third of the amount of people there, you know, most of the sites were empty, nice and spacious. You're on the, as I said, the Brockman, not the Blackwood, but it was beautiful. I was glad we went there instead. And just, you know, loved it, mate. We were on off-grid, obviously, while we were out there, so it's just the... just the battery system and the water tanks, and it was a good test of the whole system. Last year when we were off grid at Parry's Beach in Denmark for like 10 days, power was not an issue at all. We went, you know, we had no trouble charging up the batteries with a pretty good bit of sun overhead, and water was the big issue. Ran out of water pretty sort of early on in the piece, and I was continually filling the tanks up. And this time around, it was the opposite, mate. We've got the third tank on here now, and we didn't use even half of our water. We had plenty of water, which was great. We were only there for 3 days, but we had plenty of water. And I actually ran out of power, man, because we just had tree coverage over the whole van, so there was no solar. The solar was not drawing anything in. So I had to keep plugging the car in and turning the car on. We had to watch our power, which is not real fun, you know, when you like can't use this, you can't use that. And the biggest draw we've just figured out is the fact that the Starlink actually, you know, the router plugs into power to 240 volt, which means I need to have the inverter on, which is actually what sucks a lot of juice. So yeah, I'll probably need to look at, I don't know if that, I mean, it doesn't draw a lot of power. It's just having the inverter on draws a lot of power. So I'll probably need to see if there's a way I can get that, you know, set up like an adapter. So I can run it on a cigarette lighter, maybe change the plug over. I don't know. I need to get an auto sparky to have a look at that for me, or a sparky, just, you know, I certainly wouldn't cut the plug I've got, but maybe get another plug and see if I can adapt that plug and plug it into the cigarette lighter and then not have to run it off the inverter, because then it draws a lot of power. And like I said, we're running out of power, which was a bit shit. But the Starlink itself, back to that, that's been a bloody ripper, mate. You know, it was a tossing it up in the air over Christmas if we were going to get it or not. You know, it's pretty expensive. It's $174 a month for the service, and we paid $300 for the kit, which was a refurbed kit. They're usually $600, and I've just seen an advert online now that they're giving those kits away free if you get the service hooked up, which is great timing for us, $300 in the hole. But it's been really good, man. Like, the internet's super fast, fastest internet I've ever had. It sits somewhere between 170 and 200 megabits per second, which I've never had. I've never had more than 50 megabits per second with the fucking NBN in Australia. And, you know, it just needs a clear view of the sky and you'll get it anywhere. Clear view of the sky was a little bit of a problem back at that Warner Glen Bridge, as I mentioned already about the solar, but there was enough of a gap there that it found a spot and spoke to the satellites, and it just tells you, like, you've got obstructions. It builds it like an obstruction map. You can look at it and tells you shows you the gap it's got and the obstructions it's got, which was like the trees basically above it. It tells you that, you know, you're going to get interruptions every, you know, 60 seconds or whatever it is. And that just happens. So sometimes if you're using the internet, you have to wait and pause and down, while the obstruction, passed and it got a good signal again. But it's, for streaming, it's fine. If you're on your social media, it's a little bit patchy at times. But I mean, that was with a bad view of the sky. Here, where we are at Pemberton Caravan Park, I've got a nice strip of sun above us. And it's great, mate. It's bloody ripper. So we're going to be, we're going to have internet the whole way around Australia, which for the kids homeschooling and which for uploading podcasts and social media and stuff is bloody ripper. So I'm really glad we got that. If anybody is thinking of, even just getting it for your house, if you live rurally or you're just sick of the NBN in Australia, I cannot go on about it enough at this stage. I think if you've got a good, clear view of the sky, get Starlink, get it set up. You'll have ripper internet. You won't have any bloody troubles. Elon Musk knows what he's doing, mate. He does things properly. He does it better than our fucking government does, that's for sure. So far the Starlink's been a winner. Really happy I made that decision. And the other little decision we made just before we left town was buy a drone. I bought a secondhand drone in Perth off Marketplace and nearly lost the bastard the other day. Sent it up over the river at Warner Glen Bridge, whatever it's called. And, that was fine. Did a bit of an aerial 360 shot. And then I thought I'll cruise it down the river around the bend a little bit and just see if I could make it to the Blackwood and have a look and then come back. And that was a terrible idea. Like, I don't know how to fly this thing yet. I need to practice in open areas far, far more than I have. That was just so stupid. Went around the bend, started turning, overturned, flew straight to some bushes, and, luckily for me, it did not hit a tree overhanging the creek or the river and fall straight into the river and be fucked. It just got jammed up in a tree. I had to go on the paddleboard around the corner, look, finally find it in there, climb through these hell snaky, weedy sort of fucking riverbed and dig it out and come back. And I was just kicking myself the whole time. Like, you're a fucking idiot. You are not at the level to be driving that thing across a river, around bends and shit. Like, you don't know what you're doing, man. So that was pretty lucky. A lot of practice I need to have a lot of practice on that drone before I start getting some good shots with it and before I start getting confident with it as well. But, it was a good story in the end. Didn't lose the bloody drone and got a half decent shot of the Brockman and the Blackwood on it anyway. So, things are going good. Like, things are happening, man. You know what I mean? We are finding so far that like campsites and caravan parks down here are pretty expensive. Sort of 50 to 60 bucks a night seems to be the average so far, which is, more than I was hoping. Even like the bush sites, like Warner Glen Bridge, 50 bucks a night. And it's like, what the fuck do you get for that? A drop toilet and that's it, and a patch of dirt. Like, come on, dude. You guys, it's not a $50 a night site. It's just like, I don't see how they can justify charging you that much, and why are the sites so small? Why not delegate a larger area in the bush, make it 50 sites, space them all out so you don't see your neighbours, and really make it a good bush camping experience? Like, I don't understand this huge national forest. You already decided to carve a few campsites out in there. Why not actually make it worth it rather than, like, you're in the middle of the bush, in the middle of nowhere, and quite often you're like right next to your neighbours in these campsites. It's like it's a bush camp. You've got no amenities. People are out here to be at peace in the bush, away from the crowds, and you're jamming right next to each other. It doesn't make any fucking sense to me. We actually didn't end up paying the $50 a night. We paid $25 a night because, as the camp host kindly told us, there's a new legislation this year that's come out that Aboriginal people, like me, get concession entrance to all DBCA-run campgrounds, which is, like the Parks and Wildlife Department for WA. Can't remember exactly what DBCA stands for. So all campgrounds that DBCA run, we get concession, which is pretty much half price for adults, and free entrance to national parks. free entrance to national parks. You have to pay a car fee or a day fee or anything like that. There's a few other, which is great, man. It's cool. It's going to save us a little bit of money while we're in WA. I'm not sure what the deal is in the other states yet, but, you know, it's certainly in WA, it's going to save us a little bit of money. And there's, like, I read it all up. The lady told us about it. I went to the website and read it all up. You know, there's heaps of documents in there, but I just read the stuff specifically that pertain to camping and access to national parks and things like that. And, you know, essentially, there's also some other concessions around, like, use of firearms, having fires at restricted times as long as it's not a total fire ban, having dogs with you in national parks. If you get permission from the ranger, you can take your dog with you as long as they stay in the vehicle. There's a bunch of little things in there, which is really nice. And apparently, yeah, the rangers aren't even supposed to question somebody if they say they're of Aboriginal descent. They're not allowed to ask for proof or anything like that, which is fine by me either way, because, as I said, we carry our papers on us anyway. I got the my Aboriginal heritage certificate from the Trangie Aboriginal Land Council. So, you know, as I said, okay, that around, which is my paperwork, Shades and Heidi's paperwork as well. But yeah, apparently they're not even allowed to question you on that. Which is, yeah, I can understand that would upset some people, but I think it makes a lot of sense that the traditional owners of these areas have come to, you know, even though, you know, obviously they're not talking about specific cultural groups in specific areas, it's just a blanket statement. Aboriginal people are allowed to use this land for, you know, for certain purposes and can get permission to do other activities outside of what's, you know, allowed for the general public. It makes sense because, you know, there should be some sort of partnership on the use of national park lands, like lands that are dedicated as a national park. They're everybody's land for, you know, the government have control of national parks, but it's for the use of everyone in Australia. It does make sense that there'd be some concessions for Aboriginal people on those lands, specifically because, you know, certain tribal groups certainly have had, you know, there's cultural significance on those lands to them in the past, and they're not asking to remove those things as national park listed areas, because obviously that helps protect those areas, but to get, you know, specific use in those areas, and as I said, you do need permission to do certain things, but to get those concessions made makes a lot of sense to me, and I'm certainly gonna throw my hat in the ring and take advantage of that as needed. So that was a nice little tidbit of information to find out. You know, don't hate the player, man. Hate the game. it's been a better week this week than last week in the way of health, because I had a good time in Wychcliff, Margaret River. You know, we caught up with some old friends, some newer friends. You know, we were out doing stuff every day, but man, it was quite a bit of, like, I was drinking every night. You know, catching up with old friends, and it starts to wear on you. You know what I mean? Like drinking, staying up a little bit later, getting up feeling a little bit crusty. You do that 4 or 5 nights in a row, and it just really start getting behind the eight ball, behind the eight ball, behind the eight ball. And you know, I was just tired, man. Getting up doing shitty workouts, and then I was feeling not like hungover. I was fine during the day. I wasn't drinking that much, but just enough to take the edge out of, like, take the pep out of my step. And it was, as I said, over the course of a week. So, you know, the damage started conflating, and then I started feeling less, you know, I don't know, just didn't feel like that's how I want to be living my life anymore. It's good to have a catch up with people every now and then, but drag it out over a week like that, it's like, far out, man. I'm not into big, you know, drawn out sort of events like that as far as my routine and my health and stuff goes. So I'm back on track again this week, which is good. You know, a lot easier to stay on the straight and narrow when it's just me and the family and then we don't know any people in the area. So, you know, I really want to keep the training and the diet and the sleep and everything dialed in right now, because I've got some pretty lofty, you know, fitness goals to reach over the next month or two. I've already realized at this point in the game that I can certainly keep a high level of fitness up without going to a gym, which was something I was kind of concerned about when we started this journey. Am I going to be able to keep my fitness level there? Am I going to lose muscle? Am I going to go backwards in all the effort I've put into my training over the last few years? And the answer is no. I just needed to change things up, train differently. I'm certainly not lifting as heavy. I'm not lifting to failure. I'm not kind of, it's not about stacking more weight onto the same exercises week in, week out, you know, like I was doing at the gym. It's a different style of training. I'm still learning. I'm very much in the learning phase, but it's much more repetition, you know, higher reps, doing a bunch of different exercises, a lot of full body stuff. I hit legs every single day, core every single day. It's a lot of more about functional movement. So it's about movements that I actually use day to day. And it's been amazing already to see that how much my injuries are healing up. I'm not pushing and training through injuries anymore. If I get a niggle or if I get a tweak or if I feel injured somewhere, I'll train around it instead. So what I mean by that is instead of doing the same exercise that I'm going to do no matter what and just pushing through the pain with maybe it's a lower back, I put the weight belt on, like the lifting belt on and then have some Nurofen and train through it. I was doing that sort of shit all the time. Now it's like I'll just adjust my workouts for the next few days and don't do the exercises that tweak that area that's sore and give it a chance to heal. And that's been working great. It's great not to be sore all the time. And it's functional movement. It's strength that I actually use throughout the day. So you're less likely to get injured just in your normal active lifestyle from day to day also, which is great, you know. And as far as those goals I want to reach, I'm currently trying out my hand at learning the pistol squat, which is like the one-legged squat, one leg out the front, and you just squat down on one leg and back up again. I'm still doing it assisted at the moment, so holding on to something as I go down and up. It's great for core and unilateral strength, you know, evening up in the deficiencies on both sides of your body. And the big one I'm trying to nail at the moment is the handstand push-ups, which is, oh man, I've got a long way to go with that. I'll get the pistol squat before I get the handstand push-up, that's for sure. It's obviously great for core strength, shoulder strength, stability, and really fucking hard, you know. I can't even do a handstand and just balance on my own yet without, you know, falling one way or the other. So I'm still doing handstands up against a wall. I'm doing a bunch of different exercises to strengthen myself in the positions that you need to be strong in for a handstand push-up. So doing a handstand push-up against a wall, going down and holding like that lowered position, which was a tip I got off Whitey from Grim Reaper's podcast, who's just mastered the handstand. Well, you know, just learned how to do the handstand push-up recently. There's like the frog stance. You go onto your elbows and you put your elbows on the inside of your knees. You go onto your hands. You lean forward and you like balance sort of with your head facing towards the ground, kind of in a handstand position. Handstand position, but leaning with your elbows on the insides of your thighs. You kind of balance there for a while. You learn to use your fingers as little levers so you don't over tip forwards. There's this other push-up, I can't remember what it's called, but you get your legs up really high behind you and you kind of do this push-up almost in the handstand push-up position. So you're working your shoulders as you do those push-ups, not your chest as much. There's a bunch of things that I'm practicing and trying to do and just trying to learn how to push off the wall and balance my handstand without falling over as well. So there's a lot to learn and a lot to strengthen. And I'm sort of coming from a disadvantage point as well because of my dodgy shoulder. So I've used to dislocate my right shoulder, well, both of them, but mainly my right one all the time in my younger years. Haven't done it for about 9 years now. But when I do certain exercises, like a military press and certainly the handstand push-up, it clicks and crunches and grinds and it doesn't hurt, but it terrifies me. I just imagine it popping out. I'm like, I don't want to dislocate my fucking shoulder again, man. So I'm kind of half my mind is dedicated to like being in a certain position and not letting my shoulder get into a compromised, you know, position where I could dislocate it, and then hearing the clicking and crunching and grinding and kind of freaking out, and then trying to spend the other part of my attention on actually doing and learning the movement and getting stronger there. So I've got some ground to cover to get that one nailed, that's for damn sure. The shoulder, man, I mean, When I say a bunch of times, I think I ended up dislocating my right shoulder 25 times and my left shoulder about 19, 20 times. First started at school, playing badminton, how embarrassing. Then I did it playing indoor beach volleyball, not much better. Then I dislocated it probably drunk, doing wrestling and doing stupid shit. Then I dislocated it at work a few times. Then I dislocated it in fights a couple of times. That was not good. And it just got to a point where, like, I drove along one day with my arm out the window of the car and sneezed and my shoulder popped out. I woke up one day in the bed with my hand above my head, like that, you know, where you sleep with your hand behind your head and your elbow out. I woke up and my shoulder was just dislocated. I was like, oh, fuck, my shoulder's out of its socket. It's like 3 a.m. It wasn't hurting at the time, but I knew it was out and I had to sit up and lean forward and pop it in. I used to pop it in myself. I think after the third time I went to the hospital and like the drawn out process and it hurts the whole time it's out and watching the doctors kind of fuck around and not really have like a great idea of what they were doing. They were kind of winging it every time. They like knew what to do, but it's not something they do all the time. I thought I dislocated it drunk one night and just thought, fuck it, I'll do it myself. I know what I'm doing. So leaned forward, let my arm hang, calmed my breathing down. And then just started pulling at my wrist, little pulls, little slow, soft pulls, because mine would dislocate forward and out of the socket. So it's sitting on my chest, and I just pull it a little bit, a little bit, a little bit, a little bit, and give it a little yank, and pop, it'd pop out past the socket, flop back in, and it would be like the best feeling. It was just like this. Oh my goodness, this feeling of relief, like a body orgasm. Oh, the shoulder's back in. It's like, my goodness. You know, and once I did it once, I just learnt how to do it and did it every single time from then on. Then it wasn't out of its socket for a long period of time, causing more damage and got really hectic, man. The worst one probably was on my Bucks, too. We had a house up in Lanceland for the weekend and we had a boat there and some four drives and quad bikes and I was on the sea biscuit behind the boat, cruising around, you know, on the ocean there, and the line went slack and then tightened up again and popped my shoulder out and I fell into the water. It didn't bother me that much at this time, and it happened so often. And I like put my other hand up, said, hey, my shoulder's out. The boat came back around. I could only give him one arm, like I'm like a wet fish. They're trying to pull me back up into the boat, you know, like I'm a dead weight. Get in the boat. I'm like, take him to shore. I'll get out and swim to shore the rest of the way and sort this out. Got and, you know, jumped back in the water near the shore, swam on my back, just kicking my legs to the shore where a bunch of lads were waiting. There was about 10, 15 guys there all hanging around. Oh, what's going on? Oh, I've dislocated my shoulder. So I'm going to pop back in. Because we were like the adrenaline, pumped up, drinking all day, all the guys standing around watching, I couldn't get it back in for the life of me, man. I'd never had problems getting it in, but I couldn't do it. So I said to the boys, one of you lads is going to have to pop this in for me. Mate Eli fucking goes, I'll do it. I said, you get the fuck away from me, you prick. He's like my best mate. I said, you're not fucking touching me. I don't trust you with this as far as I can throw you. One of the other lads, Jimbo, said, I'll do it for you, man. And he's a trustworthy sort. I said, all right, cool. What I want you to do is put your foot on my chest, grab my arm by the wrist, and just slowly push your foot away and pull my arm towards you. He's like, all right, okay. And we did that and it hurt like buggery and eventually, bam, pop went in. I got a crowd of like 15 blokes standing around, leaning in, waiting to watch it happen. And then, you know, the big, whoa, as it goes in and shit. But aside from that, it was pretty easy to get back in all the time. And I haven't dislocated it since before we had Shady. So that's how I know it was about 9 years. So touch wood, I don't pop it out again anytime soon. But I am nervous still whenever I do the handstand push-up that it's going to pop out. And then I can imagine having, you know, continual problems with it again. Like I even went down to get the surgery on this damn shoulder and they put me under the knife, put me to sleep, everything. And then I woke up and said, oh, how'd the surgery go, doc? And he's like, oh, we didn't do it. I said, well, why not? What happened? That's what I flew down from Port Hedland to Perth for you and put me to sleep and shit. He goes, we went in with the cameras and I'll show you the footage. He goes, and you've got, first of all, I couldn't dislocate your shoulder. I've got two bone spurs where the cartilage should be on the outside of that socket. They've grown bone spurs to keep your shoulder in, calcium spurs. And he goes, and second of all, he goes, you've got no cartilage left inside that joint, so it's essentially bone on bone, and you know, you need a shoulder replacement. That's what the guy told me. You need a shoulder replacement. He goes, you're too young to do shoulder replacements. You're only 30, so we don't do that. I was just like, fuck, man, that sucks. So I've just been dealing with it, managing it ever since. And I'm not going to get a fucking shoulder replacement because my shoulders are fine. I've managed to work with what I got. But certainly there is an issue there that I need to be present of. Oh, pardon me. That I need to be present of when I'm doing certain things. Yeah. Yeah, that's where we're at. But as far as the caravan, though, back to the travelling journey story, as far as the caravan goes, mate, we're holding up pretty bloody well. I told you about the water problems I've had previously. We seem to have solved that with a bit of better. I mean, we didn't shower much at the last campsite. I was showering in the river, swimming in the river every morning, which was, you know, cold but beautiful, nice and fresh. You know, but we seem to have got a handle on the water problem. The power, we know that I've got to do a bit of tweaking with how we use the power and where we set up. You need to be present of how much sunlight I've got above me, and maybe if we don't get sunlight, I can't use the internet in that area until I can figure out a 12-volt solution for the router. So there's a few things going on there, but the van's holding up well. You know, these are the things you got to consider and think about when you're off-grid camping. So we'll just get better at that. As we go, the one thing that's really concerning me at the moment, though, is the ute, the car. Three times it's happened to me now, on three consecutive legs with the caravan hitched up, is that it's thrown up a spanner error code, which I looked up in the manual, says powertrain or four-wheel drive issue. And like I'm driving along, it just kind of goes dunk, and like it feels like it drops out of gear, and then you can't put it back into gear. The car won't accelerate, and you just got to like pull over to the side of the road. I turn the car off and on again, and the problem's gone. I can drive off and go about my life. Never had that before, and it's only ever happened since we got the car remapped. So I'm currently investigating what the fuck's going on with that. I need to get the car into a mechanic and ask his opinion on it, and then I need to, you know, chat to the guys that at PPD Performance who did the remap for me and asked if they've ever had anything like that and what it could be, because it's certainly something that's happened since I got the remap done. So I'm a little bit upset about that. I don't want the fuck car popping it out of gear, like, you know, just going into limp mode or whatever it's doing, you know, regularly or ever, really. And certainly not when you're traveling up a big hill or something, then all of a sudden the car stops driving, you got to pull over, might not be a good shoulder to pull the car over on. Like, it's dangerous, man. So I really need to get on top of that this week. That's something that's not cool. yeah, kind of stressed me out that. But, you know, it these are the issues we're going to deal with along the way, and we'll just keep knocking them off as they pop up, and I'm sure they will keep popping up. But it feels good to be started the trip for real. Look forward to solidifying some routines and moving towards new goals, and, you know, looking forward to this new phase of training, as I mentioned, and fitness goals, and looking forward to being a tight family unit and making memories together with my family, and all the problems and dramas that come with that, like arguing with my kids to school. You know, it was usually my daughter, it was my son today, and trying to keep my cool and not lose my temper, and we're stepping on each other's toes sometimes and living in each other's pockets. But, you know, these are the things that we've got to figure out, and I think it's worth it because, you know, I've given my opinion on the homeschooling and the schooling system in general. So it's not going to be easy doing it this way, but I think it's going to be worthwhile, and I think we're doing the right thing for our family. And I say I think, but I know we are. For us, we're doing the right thing, so I'm happy we're doing it, but I'm certainly not going to blow smoke up your ass and tell you it's all rosy and easy and perfect and is the dream life. Like, it is my dream life. Currently, this is what I've dreamt of doing, what I want to do, and I'm happy we're doing it, and I think it's worth it. But it's not just easy, it's not all roses. And I knew it was not going to be. So I was very honest with myself about that before we left and hit the road. And I think that if you're planning on doing an extended trip like this, especially as a family, you need to be honest with yourself and be aware that, yeah, it's not all Instagram photos and videos and, you know, beautiful spots and not working. Like, we're busy every day There's work to do. It's probably a harder life. It is a harder life than living in a house with your routine and you drive to your job and you drive to the gym and you drive home and you go to the supermarket and you've got your spare room you can throw your shit in and you've got your, you know, that predictable sort of lifestyle comes with a lot of, you know, positives, and things are a bit easier. So now we're like figuring out, have we got enough power to survive? Do we have enough water? Where's the dump point? Where can I put all my family's human excrement and waste today to get rid of the, you know, so we can use our toilet again? You know, like fucking, there's constant issues and problems and adjusting and figuring things out and working, set up, pack up, drive, move. Oh, there's a problem with the car. Fucking hell, diesel's expensive this week. Like, these are the issues that we've signed up for and I knew we were going to face. I didn't know what they were all going to be, but I knew they were going to be there. And for me, I'm really happy that these are the problems we're dealing with on a day-to-day basis now. And that was one of the things I was saying before we left for this journey as well. Like, I was sick of dealing with other people's problems and have spent all my life and all my energy on helping fix other people's problems. Now our problems are our problems and I've got unlimited energy to fix those. So yeah, we're on the journey. It's going to be one hell of a journey and I hope you guys are going to follow along with us and tell your mates about it and get the word out and yeah, hopefully we can shed some light on what it's like traveling around Australia as a family. This is what I wanted to do with the podcast. I know people have YouTube channels. I will put stuff up on YouTube, but that's not my passion. I've obviously got the Instagram and, you know, the social media, the Facebook stuff for like snippets of what's happening on the way around. But this podcast right now is going to be the home of what it's like, where we're going, who we're meeting, what the towns are like, what the caravan parks are like, what problems we face, you know, and I can sit here and talk for an hour about it and give you all the ins and outs and I'm going to be super fucking honest and I really hope that that's beneficial to people who want to do this. And I'll also be talking about all the other shit in life that I'm passionate about, you know, fitness and health and nutrition and what the fuck's happening with the government and, you know, fucking, yeah, being a present father and family and all that sort of stuff. It's all going to be in here still. But certainly traveling around and bringing the podcast on the road has been a huge part of what I've wanted to do for the last few years. So when I take a step back and look at it, I'm fucking pumped that we're finally doing it, you know. And I just think that we need to do that as people more often, is take a step back and look at our lives from one step away from the action sometimes, and because we're really hard on ourselves. I know I am. I know you guys are as well, you guys and girls. And like, look, the world is full of some really impressive people. It really, really is. There's some people out there doing amazing things, physical things, things with their career, creative things, people who've like created their own lifestyle that they imagined and built out of imagination and hard work, you know, and people who seem fulfilled and dialed in and healthy. And, you know, the one thing all those people have in common is discipline, which I spoke about the other day on the Instagram page, discipline versus motivation. You know, motivation comes and goes. It's fleeting. It's not something that we can really control. You can do things to get inspired, but whether or not you're motivated of a morning is something that you can't really control. Whether or not you're disciplined of a morning is 100% in your control. So we need to lean on discipline to get shit done and to be productive and to be, you know, fulfilled in our lives. And when the motivation comes, ride the fucking train for sure. But don't rely on it, you know, because discipline is actually what will set you free, which is one of those things that seems counterintuitive. Like, discipline, you think, oh, having to get up and do this thing I don't want to do, having to, you know, do X, Y, Z when I just want to sit on the couch and chill out or whatever. Yeah, it's doing things you don't want to do, but when you've done those things you don't want to do, the feeling of freedom and fulfillment you get afterwards is amazing, and it's what you miss out on if you're not disciplined. You always have this niggling voice in the back of your head saying you didn't do what you were supposed to do. You fucking know you've got shit swept under your rug. You haven't fucking sorted your house out, you know. You haven't sorted your life out. So you do the things you don't want to do. You get them done and you have a sense of peace within you, you know, and fulfillment. So, but saying all that, it's like I'm doing pretty good. I'm doing okay. I'm doing what I want to do with my life. I'm having a bloody red hot crack at it. I'm doing something that's scary, something that's outside of the norm. And I think that myself and you guys listening in whatever way it relates to your life need to take a step back sometimes and go, hey man, with the skills I've got, with the circumstance I'm in, with, you know, the dreams and goals and stuff I've got to work with, I'm doing all right, man. I'm doing all right. I've got a pretty good life. And it's good to take inspiration from those people online that I spoke about doing really amazing, impressive, you know, crazy things. It's great to take inspiration from those people, but it's important to know where the line is where you're envious and you're beating yourself up because you're not doing it, you know, as well as you perceive someone else to be doing. So that's the little message I want to leave you guys with today. That's for myself as much as it is for anybody else. You know, take a step back, give yourself a break. If you're getting up in the morning and trying your best, or you're doing a little bit better than you did yesterday, and we're going to have days where we backtrack, but as long as when you refocus, you get up and you do a little bit better than you did the day before again, you know, you're doing all right, man. And if you're not doing that, if you're sitting on your ass and you know you're fucking being lazy and you know you're not getting better and you know you're doing all the things you shouldn't be doing and you're not doing any of the things you should be doing, well, fucking maybe you do need to push a little bit harder. But if you are doing those things, like a lot of people listening to this podcast will be doing, we need to give ourselves a break sometimes, I think, and not confuse inspiration with envy or trashing ourselves because we're not doing what someone else is doing. So that's what I want to leave you guys with today. Thank you for listening. As always, I don't have a song to play for the end of this podcast today, just because I haven't. No, do I? No, I don't think I do. There's nothing that's been jumped out at me over the course of the last week or so that I've got saved on my phone or anything. So I'm going to probably go out without a song today. But we'll be back again next week, mate. As I said earlier on, it's a Monday today. We were moving, traveling on the Sunday, so I just couldn't find the time or the space to get it done. But we're here now, got this one in the books. I need to get it wrapped up because my wife is being kicked out of the caravan. She's sitting out the front on her laptop doing some work. So I'm going to let her back in the van now before she gets jack of this. And yeah, we'll see you guys again next week. Thanks for your support. Tell your fucking mates about it. Like, you know, share the shit. When you see me pop these up on Facebook, do me a favor, man. Just click share that link and share it out to your fucking friends on your page as well. Really help. You might get one person that sees it and decides to come and listen next week. And, you know, that's a new follower, a new listener. So please do that for me. I'd really, really appreciate it. All right. Take it easy, guys. Enjoy yourselves. Look after yourselves. Have a good week. We'll catch up again next Sunday. Peace.